Good afternoon. You're listening to Motherlands, an Asian Heritage Month special programming show on CITR 101.9 FM, brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I'm Isa. CITR 101.9 FM broadcasts from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. We have a packed show for you today. To start, we have Rachel Lau's Diasporic Field Notes, followed by an interview with them on the process and rationale behind this piece. Then we have a lovely piece by Akshay Kulkarni about the fate of the Punjabi market amidst pressures of gentrification. Lastly, we have Xiangxia, a personal piece made by me exploring my personal experiences of identity and history as a second-generation Chinese Canadian. Okay, let's get started. Rachel Lau is a multidisciplinary artist, writer, and radio producer. They currently study media studies at UBC and minor in Asian Canadian and Asian Migration Studies. Diasporic Field Notes is an audio journal from when Rachel was living in Hong Kong from 2018 to 2019. The piece captures the essence of the ex-British colony and current political frontline that is also their father's hometown. Let's take a listen.
Take a double take just to see if I missed it or if I was imagining it, but then the thunder comes and I know that the lightning was there. The thunder seems to roar and creep through my windows, and the hum of the air conditioner is steady. I watch the blue-white light flashes in the sky against a backdrop of pink-orange-gray, and the clouds covering the moon, and I see nothing. And the lightning keeps flashing, and the trees keep swaying, as if they're whispering into the wind. They move with such ease. And the rain scatters across my window and it distorts the light coming through. I look across the way to see the apartments lit across from me. Everyone's still awake. And maybe they too are watching the rain.
系啊，不过咧，你中意食火锅定食啊龙虾？我同阿长长谂住一系带你去食龙虾伊面，一系带你去食火锅。你中意打边炉？你中意边样啊？同埋咧，你手機咧可唔可以打香港嘅電話噶？你個手機咧，即係你個 WhatsApp 呢個電話咧，就係、是、加拿大噶嘛。咁我打電話俾你嘅話，係對即係你有冇普通嘅香港 local call 啊？
做了一段時間就沒有做，就轉了，因為人家那間收廠啊，收了他那間鋪頭啊，那個地址啊，即是那個租約到期了，就不再續租給他了。那爺爺呢就搬了下去界限街這裡、就做門市部，就是做皮褸了，皮褸啊或者那些魚褸啊，總之就是主重是做皮的。咁啊，我都有嫲嫲嗰件皮褸啊，不過唔知執咗去邊啦。
咁你細個嗰時有冇幫手噶？我話好幫手啊！
我好細個做 sales 噶，真係好細個做 sales 噶啦。
幾歲先？
小學咯，十一二歲咯。我哋喺鋪頭啊，係啊，好愛鋪頭。咁阿爺爺咧就藏喺裏面啦。咁嫲嫲咪喺鋪頭嗰度睇布咯。睇布咁我哋細個啊嘛，我哋細個冇街去噶嘛，唔準去噶嘛。咁咪又喺鋪頭同即係阿嫲嫲又睇住鋪頭，又睇住我哋。
Meron na pong desisyon ng POEA dito. Malapit na po patupad. Kasama po yan sa pinaglalaban natin, yung oras at pagkain. Pero yan po may papanalo natin pag tayo po sama-sama ang pinilos.
I'm interested in, you know, like queer revivalry as a concept, it's centered around queerness. So I think the way that, you know, you both define queer is very important. How that might be really cool. Correct, or like the things that you end up collecting or the vision that you have for it, right?
It's funny because you said that, yeah, society in Hong Kong squashes queerness, and like that is totally true in like a legislative and political mainstream, also mainstream media and advertising level. But everyone I know, especially very well-traveled friends who visit me here, say that Hong Kong has the biggest population of queer-presenting people they've seen in their life.
Shanghai.
Even more than, like, San Francisco or the Castro or, like, these other, you know, queer paradise, right? And I think that's a unique thing that I don't know what the origins of that are, but I think it's amazing that there are so many people in Hong Kong who present in a way that may be slightly divergent from the gender they've been assigned.
Mandy， 係 Rachel 啊，我到咗機場啦，而家大概七點鐘就會登機啦。唔好意思，今日趕唔切嚟探個 B， 但我聽媽咪講話去九磅幾喎，咁勁，恭喜曬，又多一個孫。你代我同 Gigi 講恭喜啦，同埋拜拜啦。咁好啦，多謝你。咁歡迎我嚟到香港，又亦都可以同你哋一齊飲茶食飯，真係好。咁希望將來到時可以見啦。
青春暴動定勢，
對抗白色恐怖，
我要執好水。
I had the chance to talk to Rachel and talk to them about their creative process and what Asian Heritage Month means to them. Here's our conversation. So can you tell me a little bit about the process behind making this piece?
Yeah, sure. It's funny because I didn't collect the sounds with a very specific purpose in mind. And the final piece itself is definitely something that was emergent. So I moved to Hong Kong in May of 2018. And when I was there, I noticed that the sounds in the city are really unique, and I really wanted to capture that and remember that. So when it came time that CITR was doing 24 hours of radio art again, I decided to use the sounds that I'd collected in Hong Kong during my time living there to create a piece, and that's how Diasporic Field Notes came about.
I am curious about your thoughts of this kind of celebration of a Pan-Asian identity.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I think, first of all, what I would say is that Asia or Asian as a category is one that is incredibly fraught and one that is one that is very much externally imposed, but one that also matters. It's kind of like this weird catch 22 where it's like, if we don't use Asian to refer to ourselves, then what term will we use? And then how do we find our place or gain leverage within the structures that we exist within in order to gain the rights or the resources that we need, right? So there's that part. And then there's the other aspect of it, which is thinking about how Asianness is a very, Asianness is an incredibly heterogeneous category, and there are so many experiences encompassed within it that often when we refer to Asian, especially in the context of North America, I find we're only referring to East Asian people, so Chinese people, Japanese people, and Korean people primarily, just given the history of the formation of these settler states. But as well, like, I think colorism has a role to play in it too, that folks who are Southeast Asian or South Asian are often not included in that reference to Asian or Asia when we talk about that. I mean, that being said, I understand the appeal and the importance of Asian Heritage Month as a time to reflect on the presence of Asian peoples in Canada specifically, but I think that it does a disservice to all peoples that are grouped under Asian to kind of refer to us in such, with such a broad label, because I find that really doesn't tell us anything except for the fact that our places of ancestral origins are within the same kind of vague geographic location in the world.
Accessibility.
Disability, mental health,
ADHD and ADD,
and many, many more topics we explore and cover.
But where?
On CITR's All Access Pass.
A unique and collectively run show on equity, inclusion, and creating awareness for people of all abilities in BC and around the world.
Catch us every other Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 4. If you want more info or want to get involved, please find us on Facebook or send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Welcome back to Motherlands, the 2020 Asian Heritage Month programming at CITR 101.9 FM, made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. So this week's theme is Sounds from Home, and we started out the show by hearing Rachel Lau's Diasporic Field Notes, an audio journal from Rachel's time living in Hong Kong in 2018 and 2019. Next, we have a piece from Akshay Kulkarni. Akshay Kulkarni, the producer of this piece, is a student at the UBC Graduate School of Journalism. He's a member of the News Collective at CITR and from Bengaluru, India. He loves talking about his own country, social justice, and history. That's why he really wanted to talk about one of the most immediate connections to India in Metro Vancouver, Main Street's Punjabi Market. Metro Vancouver has a long history of South Asian migration, and the historical center of Punjabi culture in particular has been three blocks around Main Street in South Vancouver, the Punjabi Market. But as we saw with Chinatown, a deep legacy in history doesn't guarantee a future. Before the pandemic, we would have all been celebrating the Vancouver Punjabi Market's 50th anniversary at the end of this month. But now it's especially tough to be a small business in Vancouver's Little India. The gentrification of Chinatown is widely discussed here in Vancouver, but there are other spaces being threatened by the wretched beast of capitalism. Producer Akshay Kulkarni took a look into the historic Punjabi Market to see its plans to weather the storm. To find out, here's the future of Vancouver's Little India.
Vancouver's Punjabi Market is North America's oldest South Asian enclave. The three-block zone around 49th and Main Street in South Vancouver is the historical center of Indian and Punjabi culture in the Lower Mainland. Its annual Vaisakhi parade used to attract more than 300,000 people each year. The market has many firsts. Its bilingual street signs were the first signs in the Punjabi language outside the Indian subcontinent. It's the largest South Asian market outside South Asia. And this year, May the 31st marks the 50th anniversary of the first immigrant-owned business opening up in the area. But the Punjabi market's deep legacy might all be for nothing soon, considering its future is up in the air.
This is a neighborhood once known and celebrated for its multicultural vibrancy. Now it's storefront after storefront that's closed. Windows and doors papered over, saying come and visit us in our new location, which usually means in most cases over the bridge to Surrey.
The numbers don't look good for Vancouver's Little India. A 2018 study by the City of Vancouver found almost half of all retail businesses in the area closed down or moved in the last 10 years. The same study warned that according to current trends, the market's commercial area might completely disappear soon. The situation is sure to be even more precarious considering the COVID-19 pandemic's impact on local businesses. At stake for the shops around 49th and Main is not just the threat of gentrification, it is the loss of immigrant history and culture itself. According to those who know it best, shopping at the Punjabi market during its heyday was not just a series of monetary transactions. It was a way to rediscover an Indian shopping experience rooted in community and connection.
With the Punjabi market, what happened was that as people were quickly moving out of here, it started taking on a different look. You know, it looked beat down. It looked like almost like a ghetto.
So, 50 years on, the Punjabi market faces a huge fork in the road. Will it be revived? Can its seemingly lost spirit of South Asian togetherness even be cultivated again? And how will that togetherness be found when there's a need to balance culture with commerce? I'm Akshay Kulkarni, an Indian student at the UBC Graduate School of Journalism. In this feature for CITR 101.9 FM's Asian Heritage Month, I talked to two Punjabi Canadians who want to save the market. And they don't want to do it with rezoning or with more business. They want to do it with art and make the market a cultural center for South Asians. At first glance, a focus on art might seem far-fetched. In pure monetary terms, the Punjabi market faces a lot of competition, not just from other South Asian businesses on Fraser Street nearby, but also from larger business areas in Surrey and Delta. The precarious nature of Main Street shopping district was underscored by the non-profit Heritage Vancouver, which placed it on a watch list of culturally threatened places in the Lower Mainland. The Punjabi Market Regeneration Collective, or the PMRC, wants to change that. They're a group of grassroots community organizers who are working with the city of Vancouver to make sure their local heritage is properly represented in City Hall. I spoke to two of their members.
My name is Gulzar Nanda, and I'm the chair of the Punjabi Market Regeneration Collective. We're a collective of individuals who are focused on the sole mission of sort of reviving Punjabi culture in South Vancouver. And we're going to do that through the use of public space, which is the Punjabi Market, the oldest little India in North America.
Yeah, and I'm Jag Nagra. I'm the creative director of the PMRC. And there's a number of initiatives that we sort of had and have on the go, sort of beautifying the market, just bringing it back to life and creating more arts and culture in the neighborhood and kind of honor what was already there in the 90s, like at its peak, and sort of bring that liveliness back to the market.
I only moved to Vancouver last year. As an Indian student, the Punjabi market is one of my most tangible connections to home. Whenever I go there to get groceries, I'm constantly amazed that I'm 12,000 kilometers away from home and I can still see jewelry and saris for sale. It isn't quite home away from home, but it says something when those three blocks feel more familiar to me 1 year later than most of the city does. That's why I was so shocked to learn that the market was under threat. One of my first questions that I asked the Regeneration Collective was filled with surprise. How did we get here?
So it's complicated, and I'm not going to stop there. I'm going to try to give you the best and most thoughtful answer that I can. It is complicated, and I think it started around the late 80s. The market was still booming, and you know we know that the market got support from different organizations. But at that time, you know, the migration patterns in the city, they were sort of shifting. People were coming to South Vancouver, like directly immigrating from India. But there was a small population growing, you know, south of the Fraser River in Surrey. And the market thrived through the 90s, but and even in the early 2000s. But when the recession hit in 2008, it really, really accelerated that migration. Obviously that there's a shift of priorities after a recession, and that was the same for the city. They started focusing on basically their core programming and what they offer the city, because it's expensive to do arts and cultural work, right?
Immigrant-owned small businesses are a hallmark of the market and South Asian commerce more generally. In South Asia, merchants and shoppers have a parasocial relationship that was embedded in the culture of the market itself. There's a reason bazaars are such a fixture in the subcontinent even now, with transactions being a backdrop for community interaction. Gulzar and Jag say that in the 80s and 90s, Vancouver's Little India served that same purpose for BC's South Asian population.
We knew what was there in the past, right? Like, and arts and culture is such a big part of Indian culture, right? Sure. Like, you can't travel to India without being inundated in all your senses. So that's something we were really working towards, bringing that back and having newcomers and people that have grown up here all like something they can kind of claim and be proud of, and have a neighborhood that we're all proud to show off to tourists and our friends and everything.
The commercial is so wrapped up in the social and cultural in India, and that was sort of what was here before, right? But I think that in North America and in Western society, the cultural is a thing on its own, right? And we want to bring arts and culture here, because it's, I know that we don't want to conform just with the Western idea of what a place should be, but you know, that approach, offering programming to people and making it free, right? Having a place where people can come and they don't have to spend money, they can spend their time to understand, and they can understand through conversations. That's really important to us. It's not just like, hey, we come here, spend your money, and that's how you're going to get your page. It's you come here and you just hang out. And that's how you understand.
But the move to Surrey and further economic downturns, including the current anxiety around COVID-19, might prove to be a death sentence for this vibrant culture centered around small business. This threat was exemplified recently when a 20-year-old Indian sweet shop on the corner of 49th and Main was forced to close to make way for a Tim Hortons, perhaps the most mass-market brand in the entire country. There were concerns in the local community that this might be the start of a gentrification process, similar to what is occurring to another of Vancouver's most famous ethnic enclaves, Chinatown. Gulzar says a diversification of businesses in the area might be inevitable, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have hope for the market's future.
I think that what's going to happen is that the retail landscape here will change a little bit to suit the needs of the people who live around us, right? Is that a good or bad thing? I'm not sure yet. I want the people who decide to invest their time, their money, their families here, you know, and this, from a small business perspective, you know that it's a family thing. I want them to experience something that's fruitful and the way that it was for myself and my family, right? Now with Chinatown, you know, there's a varied mix of businesses there, and it speaks to the people that live around there, right? We in our process don't want to forget our elders. We don't want this place to change so much that is not accessible to our elders. So thankfully the city of Vancouver, they want us to consult with them and figure out what the business plan here is moving forward. And we'll always center our people, but you know, it's a free market. And when somebody sees that this place has potential, they're going to want to move in here. Like for instance, Tim Hortons opened across the street, and I have nothing against Tim Hortons. Thankfully it's owned by somebody who grew up in this neighborhood, right? And they care about this place, right? And we hope that that's the case moving forward. If there is a change in the business mix here, or the service mix or the product mix, there's people that have a connection to this place, right? Besides that, it's a free market. We don't have much control over it. But what we can do is we can do the arts and cultural stuff here. And that's how we want to center this place.
That brings us back to the PMRC's stated intent to change the look of the Punjabi market through the use of arts and culture. A huge step forward for them was when Vancouver City Council passed a resolution last year to commemorate the market's 50th anniversary this year. They promised to include the PMRC in a wide-ranging public consultation process. Gulzar and Jag are just glad the council's on their side when they want to celebrate history.
The public consultations were fantastic, and they were much more well-received than I had expected them to be. You know, my family started a business here in 1985, so I spent a lot of time in the Punjabi market. And, you know, you look outside and just with that Vancouver weather, sometimes it's gray, it's rainy, and you try to project yourself out into the future and you think, you know, what is this place going to be, right? And then you walk into these consultations and it's a juxtaposition to what you thought, like a stark juxtaposition to what you thought the place was. Like it was so many people, they were smiling, they were beaming, they had so much input. And a lot of it went into what we were talking about earlier, is that they want to see sort of an arts and cultural revival here. Especially the aesthetic aspect, how do we make this space different than other places in Vancouver, and we make it distinct. So the city, they were fantastic. They hired South Asian support. So there was people there that could translate what our elders were saying. There are younger individuals, people like us, millennials, Gen Z, that we got to interact with, sort of understand what they want to see out of the place.
And if I can go on that point, I think like it really felt to us like we were being heard. And I think for a first time in a long time, like with the generation before us, sometimes it felt like they're needs weren't being heard or met, they weren't being valued. And I feel like we were able to sit down at the table with them and discuss our concerns and like our disappointments with how things have gone in the past decades. And yeah, it felt good.
So how might the Punjabi market look like in a few years? The public consultation found that local residents wanted decorative lighting, painted murals, banners, and parklets, among other things. More than anything, Jag says, they want the new market to be unique.
One of the big things I wanted to do was when you're driving along Main Street, like I wanted it to be, you know, you're in Punjabi market. And that would include like perhaps painting the light poles completely different color than the, I think they're dark gray or black right now. Make them maybe bright pink, liven it up with fresh banners, right? And there were some plans, I don't know how realistic this is, but maybe even painting the buildings. And just, that's what I would want to see. Like when you travel India, it's just an explosion of color. Even when you're at the Vaisakhi parade, you just see a rainbow of color. And I always found that, just got goosebumps every time I would go to Vaisakhi, or just, you know? So yeah, I want it to be just visually different than any other part of Vancouver. And yeah.
Something came through for me as I talked to Jag and Gulzar about their plans for the market. As Asians and as immigrants, we're often talked about as part of a multicultural whole, contributing value to the entire nation. We often talk about how cultures, languages, and countries mix and interchange among themselves as part of a narrative of unity in diversity. But all traditions don't travel well, and the Indian tradition of small business people interacting and making a community out of the shopping experience is always a tough sell in the West, where commercialism and never-ending efficiency rule the roost. The Punjabi market was created, despite everything, as a space for South Asians first and foremost, as a space for community. And in an almost cruel twist, much like with Chinatown, those traditions were blamed for its struggles, despite any other economic factor. The way Gulzar talks about the future of the market, he's unashamed of it being for South Asians primarily going forward, and that, in its own fashion, might be a way for this tradition to survive.
What I want for this place is that arts and cultural revival, but sort of, you know, a hub for that South Asian expression of entrepreneurism, you know. In the long term, if we're able to achieve what our goals are, we think that's what this place will be. But that goal, you know, it's set really high. If we don't meet it, of course, it'll be a little upsetting. I won't lie. But the things that we're doing now, right, for the next 10 years, 15 years, if we're able to achieve those things, I'll be happy. Because before the PMRC, or sort of we were on the scene, the grassroots community aspect of this place was on the scene, it didn't even seem like anything would happen. It seemed like the Punjabi market was on its last legs. But in the last year, we know that that's not true. It's not. There is a vision to the next 50 years. There is sort of an idea of what the next 50 years will be. We're hoping that you know, individuals like yourself, students listening at UBC, take a keen interest in this space, and they say, you know, we want there to be a place there for us once we've graduated, and we want to sort of explore the world, and we want to bring our ideas to life, right? And we want to bring them to life in the Punjabi market, and you know, we want to open our businesses here. We want to incubate our tech idea in the Punjabi market, or we want to have it be the place where we showcase our art. That's what we want the Punjabi market to be. And I want this place to be the same way, right? I want people who are hearing about this place now for them to understand that there is this place for them, and that its values are still the same, but it's malleable to your needs, right? And for that transmutation to happen, you have to play with this place. You have to come here. You have to interact. And like water can move through a mountain, the Punjabi market will be able to move. It will transform into a place for you.
There is still a long way to go for the Punjabi market and the PMRC. Their big plans for the 50th anniversary of the market will be halted by COVID-19, and the city has yet to allocate funds or working plans for their ambitious art projects. Things may yet change in the next few years. But in many ways, it is appropriate that the PMRC seeks to ensure the future of the Punjabi market by honoring its past. They hope their plan to create art and community installations will help develop a sense of pride for South Asians in Metro Vancouver. And to do that, they will try to go back to the spirit of the Indian Bazaar, a spirit of colors, cooperation, and community. The Western narrative of progress is always a linear one. Tradition has to accept being changed or get cast by the wayside. Vancouver's Punjabi market is apparently stuck in the past, as was Chinatown, as were so many other ethnic communities across the country. But over on Main and 49th, Jag and the rest of the PMRC think South Asian Canadians should be proud of themselves for who they are and where they come from.
When our parents came to Canada, all they had was their family, right? Like a little bit of family here. It was just such a different world than what they grew up with, right? Like in India, everything's done outside. Like you wake up and you're interacting with your neighbors and everything, people in your village, people in the city. And for them, they didn't have that here. But when they went to Punjabi market, that's where they got to experience that, right? Like it was a little bit of home that they had. So I hope we can continue that. And yeah, even with people that are coming to Vancouver now, immigrating now, I want them to have that same sort of sense of belonging that our parents felt here. And we took it, like my generation, I feel like we took it for granted. It wasn't that significant to us as kids. It was just somewhere our parents took us to. And now that we're older, like we're realizing what that would have meant to them. And that's why I'm doing the work, is to preserve what Punjabi Market did for my family. We have such a big South Asian population here. And a lot of the time there's like negative press, right? Like, especially with international students and whatnot. I want people to take South Asians more seriously and, you know, have somewhere where we can turn to and be like, look at the market, right? Look at the people here, look at the innovation that's being done here. And just for the broader community in Vancouver, like I think hopefully this helps break barriers and any stereotypical things people have thought about South Asians. Like, let's bring different communities to the market and see what we're about. And so hopefully, like, I have a young daughter, she just turned 2, like I want to be able to have her go down to the market proudly.
Thank you for listening. This piece was produced by me, Akshay Kulkarni. Music is by Kevin McLeod. Listen to more Asian Heritage Month programming at CITR.ca.
You're listening to Motherlands, the 2020 Asian Heritage Month programming at CITR 101.9 FM, made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Now we have our last piece for this week, which is a personal project. I made Xiangxia, which is about my grandparents' home in Suzhou, China, and I haven't been there in a while, so this is kind of my love letter to that space, as well as the portrait of the relationship I have with the concept of home as a kid who grew up moving a lot. It's complicated. Here it is. I was 4 the first time I stepped foot on Chinese soil. We were there to visit family, a ritual practiced by most Chinese diaspora living overseas. Being 4, of course, I was very excited. Everything was new to me. I barely spoke Chinese and would often blurt out English words when I failed to come up with a translated alternative. I honestly don't remember much of the trip, but I recently found a picture. A family portrait in the courtyard of my grandparents' home. I'm sitting in the middle, on my granddad's lap, looking straight into the camera. Our family moved to Shanghai when I was 8. Visits to my grandparents' home became more frequent. Over the years, we would return over and over again. We visited my maternal grandparents a lot less, and I don't know if it's because they lived in northern China and thus too far away, or if it was just another product of the unspoken family dynamics that seemed to dictate so much of our lives at the time. It was family tradition for us to visit in the winter, since winter break for primary school students in China generally falls in January and February, coinciding with Chinese New Year. Every year we would take the train to Suzhou and spend a few weeks at my grandparents' house. It's kind of like a holiday home if your idea of a holiday is living in a rural Chinese village. The path to the house was lined with gravel, and then there was that metal door. It would creak and then open into the courtyard. The house would sit empty for the rest of the year, and that explained the chill when you stepped into the foyer. The floor was concrete and the ceilings were high. Sounds echoed easily. The kitchen was to the side, and there was a fire stove in the back. I would sit on this tiny wooden stool amongst hay and talk to whoever was sitting next to me. Sometimes it was my mom, usually it was my grandma. I still remember the smoke, the way it stays on you, and it was comforting. I would listen to my mom or my grandma tell me about the stories from when they were young. The fire would crackle and I would watch the embers flicker. Stuffing some wood inside from time to time, we made sure it burned constantly. This sort of thing was fun to me, and the curiosity and the wonder I felt about the experience never wore off. The bedrooms were upstairs. My parents, my brother, and I would stay in the main bedroom. On the bed lay the quilt my grandparents had made for my parents' wedding. There were two, I think, one red and one green. I would always smooth my hands over them and admire the embroidered dragons and phoenixes. There was an old TV in the room that rarely had reception, but on occasion would get enough signal for us to watch a show. Just barely, though, and the audio or visual would cut out from time to time with constant static. The room also had a huge closet or storage space, and to me it was like a treasure trove. I would spend afternoons there rummaging through the boxes. My mom's wedding dress was there, along with stacks of photo albums that I found great pleasure in browsing. The nights were cold, but the four of us would squeeze in horizontally across on the bed all the same, and the space heater kept us warm enough. On New Year's Eve, my granddad would always go and buy a bunch of fireworks and sparklers and firecrackers for me and my brother. We would take turns lighting them up and running for cover. The flame would look up along the wick and flicker for a second before the bright lights would pierce the darkness, shooting up into the sky. Illuminated by fireworks, we would see each other's faces and breaths in the night air, and there's nothing like being a kid and freezing your ass off to crane your head and stare at the colorful explosions in the sky. There's also nothing in the world like waking up to firecrackers on New Year's Day. The whole of New Year's Day is loud. In fact, at midnight, it is tradition to light firecrackers. Sometimes I would accidentally fall asleep early, only to be woken by the sound of gunpowder exploding over and over. This would usually go on for an hour before you could finally go back to sleep. The visits stopped the year I turned 13. My family and I moved to Coquitlam, British Columbia. We moved into a little townhouse built in 1992 on the side of a hill. The kitchen window faces the valley, and when the skies are clear, Mount Baker is visible from the balcony. It's where my parents still live today, and where I stay in the summers when I return from university. I haven't been back to my grandparents' old home since. The entire village was torn down to make way for development in 2017. I never got to properly say goodbye to the house. I didn't just lose a building or a plot of land, I lost access to family history. My grandparents' place wasn't home in the sense that we only went there once a year for Chinese New Year and only for days at a time. But it was a place that made sense to me. Sometimes I feel like my heritage is hypothetical. I don't mean I question my Chineseness, I mean it shapes the way I experience life in Canada. I get made fun of by other second generation kids for being so Asian, and I'm not ashamed of it. I mean, I've worked hard enough to make peace with being branded as such. No, it's not shame, though there was an abundance of that growing up. When I think about the house being torn down, what's left behind is a void. Having that house meant that I had history, that I belonged to something greater than myself. The house was in my family for four generations, which isn't a lot, but my family doesn't have a zupu, a lineage book to tell me who my ancestors are. I don't even really know my grandparents on my mom's side. Maybe if I had tried harder to ask, but my parents don't know a lot either. And most of the people who might have been able to give me some answers are dead. Don't get me wrong. I know whatever I'm feeling right now is nostalgia. The house was arguably old and unsightly. My grandparents were happy to be given a new apartment to live in. I know I'm projecting onto the house, but can you really blame me? Making this piece almost feels perverse. None of the audio I used is actually from the place that I describe. All I can think about is how when you access a memory, it's no longer the same. And in trying to recreate this memory of my grandparents' house, I'm corrupting my actual memories of being there. I'm exchanging my grandparents' house for this recording, even though I know my grandparents' house doesn't exist anymore. I think that the sadness I assumed my grandparents would hold might be my own. As someone who has always felt untethered as the result of moving around a lot, my grandparents' house was a constant. And now that that's gone forever, I mourn the parts of my family history that I never got to and will never learn. This is Motherlands on CITR 101.9 FM, an Asian Heritage Month special programming initiative. You just heard a piece made by me, Aiza Yu, all about my grandparents' house in Suzhou, China. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, this week's theme was Sounds from Home. I'm your host, Aiza, and today's other producers were Rachel Lau and Akshay Kulkarni. The music you heard throughout today's show is from incomptech.com as well as Blue Dot Sessions. As always, Motherlands is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. If you have a story you want to tell, if you want to contribute to the show and make something for Asian History Month, or if you're an Asian SoundCloud rapper looking for exposure, shoot me an email at specialprogramming@citr.ca. If you missed any of today's program, no worries, you can find today's episodes and every episode on CITR's website at citr.ca. Just search Motherlands in the search bar. You can also find the show in podcast form on iTunes. Tune in at the same time next Tuesday, May 19th at 3 p.m. for episode 3 of Motherlands. Next week's theme is Conversations. I'm your host, Aiza, signing off. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.